It is After Hours. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. A couple of quick Yankee points here before we get into what Carlos Beltran had to say yesterday about the Mets managerial situation, and also Cam Scataboo, his backflip that he did not stick the landing at Fanatics Fest. I thought Dennis Santana completely overreacted to Jose Caballero, and I know Caballero probably tries to get under the skin of opposing pitchers, but you can't let that type of stuff bother you. I mean, you got the double play, you got two outs. Caballero's been doing this for years. It's gamesmanship. It's part of baseball. Caballero, like I said, I think he's trying to get under your skin. Santana, to me, was sensitive, and he just overreacted, and he made nothing into something. And now you're in a situation where there could be a receipt, there could be retaliation. The Yankees could plunk one of the Pirates. They could sort of get back, get a little revenge, and defend their guy in Jose Caballero, who's obviously extremely popular with the team. And Caballero did nothing wrong. He really didn't. Santana, I thought, was way out of line. He overreacted, and he was being, quite frankly, sensitive to a situation that was completely overblown by Santana, really. And Caballero was sort of an innocent bystander there. And if you can't take that type of gamesmanship, then you just got to be better at that. You can't allow in that spot for you to turn it into something like that, where the bench is kind of clear and there could be retaliation on the Yankees' part in one of these games coming up. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. The other thing with the Yankees is they probably have to operate like Stanton's not coming back for the rest of the year. Brian Cashman at the deadline probably has to act as if Stanton is not coming back. Like, at this point, I feel as if Judge will be back before Stanton. I originally had Aaron Judge returning right around mid-August. Now I have him returning around early September. When it comes to Stanton, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, every single time Brian Cashman or Aaron Boone open their mouth about Stanton, it feels like they don't give a timetable. They have no idea when Stanton is coming back. Stanton got hurt when the Knicks were playing the Hawks in the playoffs. The Knicks championship parade was a month ago, just to give you a little context on the last time we saw Stanton. And maybe he comes back. Certainly the Yankees would want his bat in October, but it's hard to operate with the assumption that Stanton is going to come back. With Judge, I think you operate like he's going to come back because you need him back. And you certainly want Stanton back, but there's no timetable. And every time it feels like you get an update here and you're hoping that Stanton will return to the lineup at some point this summer, it just feels like it's getting pushed further and further and further down the road. And Stanton's a guy who's dealt with a lot of injuries. He's obviously a player that's getting up there in age. I just think Brian Cashman and the Yankees would be best served to operate at the trade deadline as if Stanton will not be returning to the lineup this year. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Sean joins us from Old Bridge. What's going on, Sean?
What's going on, Moogie? Hey, I'm doing all right. Hope you had a great time at Fanatics Fest, as always. Hopefully it was a spectacular weekend for you.
Yeah, Fanatics Fest was a great event over the weekend. Had a lot of fun out there. Got to meet a lot of people in the audience, a lot of callers, which is it's a pleasure for me to meet, you know, because I do the show here and I don't see who's listening. As far as I know, who the heck knows who's listening? So to actually meet some of the callers, meet some of the listeners, had a great time out there, and we love doing the shows at Fanatics Fest. So I appreciate you asking. Did you go at all or no? You stayed home.
No, I could not go, unfortunately. Maybe next year, maybe.
It's a great event if you're a sports fan, because there's so many activities. There's so many activities to do. There's so many interactive things if you're a sports fan to enjoy. And you never know who you're going to bump into. You never know who's going to be sort of on the floor there walking around. It's a great time. It's obviously 3 years running. We've been there every year. And each year feels like it gets bigger and better than the year prior.
Did you see Al Cintron there by any chance?
I did. I ran into Al, or he ran into me. He kind of came up to where I was doing the show, and we bro-hugged it out a little bit. We spoke for like 30, 40 seconds, and then I had to get back on the air. But I did see Al for a bit.
That's awesome. He did say he had a blast. He did have a blast there. He did say that on social media, which I'm glad he did. So that's always awesome. Glad you had a great time as well. And it's always special. Maybe I'll think about it. It depends on, like, if it's in my budget, maybe I'll...
You got to think about the budget, Sean. You got to think about life. You got to think about if you want to allocate your time. And I understand all of those things. I'm not here to put anybody or touch anybody's money except for people that I feel like... like Evan. I'll touch his money. But outside of Evan, I'm not going to touch your money, Sean. So something to consider. Something to consider. I definitely will vouch for it being a really cool event.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe we'll see. But... Now for the Yankees, I'm glad that they got the win, which is pretty good. And they faced a very game Pirates team. They were, of course, they're doing well in their own season. But I also heard about that little bit of interaction going on between
kerfuffle.
Cobby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I call that interaction, in my opinion. But I don't know what the deal was with that. Like, I don't know, something like he said something like that kind of like set him off.
You're saying that who said? I think Santana might have said something to Caballero, but Santana was pissed off that Caballero was doing what he always does, which is sort of engaging the pitcher at the very last second. You know, they got the pitch clock, but then the batter has a certain amount of time before they have to engage with the pitcher, meaning looking up at the pitcher. And most guys just sort of brush that off. I think some umpires have had, or Caballero and the umpires have gotten into it a little bit this year as far as when exactly he has to engage or things of that nature. I kind of remember that happening maybe a couple months ago. But this is the first time, I think, this year where a pitcher was upset about it. But yeah, Santana, I thought, was way out of line. He was overreacting, being a little too sensitive to it, and he should have just moved on. I mean, there was no reason to start any kind of war of words or anything where people had to come out of the benches and sort of defend either person involved.
Yeah, I agree. Because if I was in like that position, I would just like kept a cool head and just like worry about the rest of the game throughout the rest of the night. Because obviously, it's like not worth like getting into a bit of an argument with the opposing hitter.
Yeah, especially like I said, you could end up getting one of your hitters plunked, or there could be some type of retaliation because this happened late in the game. The Pirates, you know, obviously you're not going to hit any Pirate players when you're up a couple of runs in the ninth inning. That's not going to happen there. But either tomorrow, if they end up playing baseball, or a doubleheader on Wednesday, there could be, in theory, some type of receipt or some type of retaliation from the Yankees towards one of the Pirate hitters. Even though they had nothing to do with it, that's just the way baseball works.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I think there might be a double error because I know about the
rain is horrible tomorrow. Yeah. My rain people, my weather people, Sean, are telling me that it's going to be very heavy, that there is a very good possibility that the game gets canceled. Or now, to be fair, those same rain people told me that the Yankees were going to play on Saturday night, and those rain people are Paul Rosenberg, who we all know has an ant brain. So it really, we're trusting Paulie here in this spot. But I also heard it from a second source. I'm not going to reveal who that source is, but I trust that second source better. And apparently it's going to rain all day, very heavy, and there's a good possibility that the Yankees don't play a game tomorrow night.
Well, I did see that. Let me book on my own radar.
You know what? Check what kind of radar you got going on there. Are you more of a European model or just a regular model? Now, I go European model, but not with weather. But I, when it comes to weather, I just go on my trusty phone app. That's what I go off of.
Yeah, I use weather. I use like regular weather on my phone. So it's
regular
just,
weather.
Like, it's gonna start like around start of noon. And
that's
then,
not
like,
good though. When it starts at noon, that means there's going to be a lot of rain. There's going to be a lot of rain on the field, and it might be conditions where the field is just unplayable. You know, because I have it starting at 12 and going all the way till. Oh, and you know what? I'm getting on my old phone here. Flood watch. We had a flood watch on Saturday, so I'm not a weatherman, but it's possible we get the same type of weather we got on Saturday.
I got that heavy notification, too.
You got that heavy notification, the flood watch. That's never good.
No, the flood warning. It was not the flood watch, flood warning.
Well, either way, flood watch warning, we're splitting hairs. But either way, there's going to be, I think what we could agree on here, Sean, is that there's going to be a lot of rain tomorrow. And when usually there's a lot of rain, there's not a lot of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, it says the rest cloudy. It's for, like, my area, and then it's going to say rainy.
Yeah, but by the way, Sean, where the heck is Old Bridge, New Jersey? I'm not too familiar with Old Bridge, New Jersey.
Oh, you got to – it's a nice, cute area, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's really – if you say it's an – I don't know if that really – cute for what, though? What am I doing there? I'm a big down the shore guy because of the party scene, but when you say cute area, what am I – what, I could bring the missus there and do something?
So basically, I'm like around the Middlesex County area. So like in the central Jersey part. I'm around Atlantic, like Asbury and.
Well, what are you? Oh, you're near Asbury Park. You're saying.
Say like around an hour. That's like an hour drive wise.
That's not that close. But I've been to Asbury Park before, the Stone Pony. I've been down the shore over there before. So that's a good little spot. Me and the missus have been down there. But I've never been. Middlesex I've heard of, but I've never heard of Old Bridge.
Oh, I've been here for like a really long time.
You're a lifer. You're an Old Bridge lifer. You're a townie. Yeah. You know what they call you? A townie. You're a townie. You're just kind of one of those people that just never leave. But that's cool, though, Sean. But you know what, though? I appreciate the loyalty.
Nope, of course. That could be my new nickname now, every time I reach out.
You're a townie. Yeah, just that's what they call them. Like, when I went to college, like, anybody that's been to college, the people that live in the town, you go, I'm townies. They're just people that just, you know, they're just kind of there. And maybe you are the townie of Old Bridge, but I've never heard of Old Bridge in my life. There are a couple of towns in Jersey, and I've obviously thrown my hat in the ring to potentially move to New Jersey because I felt like Jersey needs young superstars like Bruce Springsteen. And it's nothing against Bruce, but this guy, they're still putting Bruce Springsteen out there to carry the flag for New Jersey. How many more decades does this guy have to do this? At some point, you need a young generational talent superstar to be the face of New Jersey. Maybe that's me. I don't know. I've never lived in Jersey. I do love some parts of Jersey, that's for sure. I love all parts of Jersey. Except I haven't heard a half of it. You know, when I hear Old Bridge, I'm like, that sounds made up. But perhaps my next move, because there'll be a next move when you're married to the woman that I'm married to, there's always a next move. We've moved about 55 times. We've moved more than the Athletics are going to move in the next 3 years. The Athletics, I feel like, have moved 15 times. Are they actually going to Vegas, by the way? Speaking of the Athletics, Shea Langeliers, I would go all in for him if I were the Yankees. I would push all my chips into the middle for a player like that, for a catcher like that, a power hitter. Still in the prime of his career. Hits for a high average, considering his power. I mean, he's right around 270. Now, he's striking out a little bit too much this year. Last year, though, he struck out under 100 times, or right around 100, which isn't too shabby. This year, he's already 90, so hopefully he'll cut down on that strikeout pace, because the Yankees strike out way too much, and the last thing I'd want to do is to add more strikeouts to that. But when it comes to catcher, because they're getting zero, the Yankees are production out of that position. And I don't want to hear that Ascar is tearing it up in AAA. He sucks. He's not a major league player. And with all due respect, I mean, he's just not a major league player. He's not very good. I don't think he's the magic elixir. I don't think he's the answer. But a guy like Langeliers can be. Big-time power hitter. I think he would fit like a glove at Yankee Stadium. To me, that's the move that I would push sort of all the chips in the middle. And look, at some point, you got to bleep or get off the pot when it comes to Spencer Jones, when it comes to Dominguez, when it comes to some of these players that... And Jones, it's a little bit different because he hasn't had as many opportunities as Dominguez. But there are players that, and again, you got to operate like Stanton's not coming back. But you know, you think, you hope. I'm pretty convinced that Aaron Judge is coming back. Perhaps I should take the word pretty out of there, but I'm convinced that Aaron Judge is coming back. And I know there's a lot of pessimism amongst the Yankee fans about Judge's return, but and I'm not a Yankee fan, but I'm just, my read on this is that Judge will be back early September. Stanton, your guess is as good as mine. David is calling us from the UPS truck. He joins us on After Hours. What's up, David?
Hey, how are you, man? I really wanted to just like kind of touch on the Caballero thing and just say that is it kind of like unnecessary conflict that he's kind of like Bush League in it with the pitchers of like, and then like, don't the Yankees have a little bit more to lose if we get into hitting each other's players? Like the Yankees are probably the favorite to go to the World Series out of the American League. Damn. And then you get into where, you know, Judge comes back and it's like, oh, okay, you want to hit Ryan O'Hearn. I'll hit Aaron Judge as soon as he comes back right in his rib, you know, looking at the pitcher.
But you're not playing the Pirates, so it would be probably more just a situation that would get squashed with the Yankees and the Pirates this week. I don't think it would have any carryover effect to Judge. Now,
Didn't somebody throw at him in the Dodgers game last night? I remember throw at Caballero. Susan Waldman said, oh, they didn't like that, and threw right at him again. So it's like, if this is getting started,
I feel like
they just have more to lose.
He's definitely instigating, and to your point, you don't want one of your players sort of getting the brunt of Caballero doing that. But I would think because he picks up a bat that they would just go after him, and they would just hit him. But to your point, you want to protect all your players. But I think Caballero is just going to continue to do this. This is his style. This is the way he goes about things. He's been doing this for a while. I just think this is just what he does.
Yeah.
As a player, I guess, as a teammate,
as a whatever, I'm like, let's just go beat him on the field. We don't have to look down.
Yeah, but I don't. I think whatever he's doing is within the confines of the rules. He's not doing anything illegal or wrong. And if the other team is sensitive to that, then you know what? Sometimes in baseball, you got to do a little. There's got to be a little scrap where somebody's going to get plunked with a pitch. It is what it is. Most times, you're going to get hit in the ribs or the tuchus. So you're not going to be on the IL. Obviously, you don't want to go hang anything or anything like that. But I don't. Yeah. Now we could readdress this if it ends up being a situation. But my gut is it's not going to be something that negatively impacts the Yankees.
Okay. All right, have a great night, Tommy. Good talking to you.
No, you got it, David. Good talking to you, too. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. All right, so here's the Carlos Beltran, and Carlos obviously going in the Hall of Fame. He's having his number retired with the Mets. Carlos Beltran broke some news and revealed something today, and that is Carlos, according to him, Beltran, says that Met officials broached the idea to him managing the team after Mendoza was fired, but he declined to consider the role. And I think a lot of things are a factor here. In no particular order. I don't think Beltran wants an interim tag. I don't think Beltran wanted to deal with managing in a summer where he's going to the Hall of Fame. He's having his number retired. Like Carlos Beltran has a lot on his plate. He's dealing with a lot. Great things, but he's dealing with a lot of things that are celebrating his career, and I don't think he wants to manage a baseball team in the same summer as those things are going on, plus with the interim tag being attached to it. Because I'm sure it was under the guise of, hey, Carlos, come in. If things go well, you'd be in the running perhaps to get the gig, and why would you do that if you could just wait till the end of the year and then throw your hat in the ring? And I've been saying all along, I do think Carlos Beltran is going to have a role on this team, but not as the manager. I think he's going to be hired as the general manager, if given that opportunity. Now, this would be with David Stearns remaining on the team, being the president of baseball operations still, and then Carlos Beltran would come in as the general manager. So they would work together. Stearns would take on a slightly different role because obviously now you have hired the general manager, where Stearns has kind of been doing both, general manager, president of baseball operations, sort of running everything. Now you have a general manager that takes on the role of what a general manager does with a baseball team, and David Stearns would take on the role or just have that role of being the president of baseball operations. And I think Beltran would be more interested in that position than manager. Perhaps he knows that it's going to get offered to him in the back of his mind, or he's weighing his options, or he's waiting till the end of the year where if it doesn't become available, the general manager position, he could then throw his hat in the ring for managerial position because obviously the Mets are interested in him. They wouldn't have offered, or at least according to Carlos, they wouldn't have broached him, Met officials, about the idea of Carlos managing the team. But I knew that all along. I think that was kind of thrown out there beforehand, even like by a caller or somebody on the air. Oh yeah, maybe Beltran will be the manager if and when Mendoza gets fired. And I was like, nah, I don't see it happening because Carlos has a busy summer, getting in the Hall of Fame, getting his number retired. And the interim tag, I just don't think that's something that Carlos would want attached to him. I think he'd kind of want to wait it out, see what his options are, get through this busy summer that he has, and not have to deal with being a manager of a team, you know, taking over as an interim. Because that's a tough... I could see Andy Green, although, by the way, Andy Green is not going to be up for the job at all, but that's a decision that David Stearns and the organization has already made when they handed Green to the job. I don't think that would have been the case for Beltran. Obviously, Beltran would have been managing with the idea of being hired full-time at the end of the year. And perhaps Beltran didn't want to audition for 3 straight months. He just figures with his, you know, because the Mets have literally already hired him to be the manager before. So perhaps he said, you know what, with the thought of that, plus how highly thought of I am across baseball, and obviously I'm getting my number retired by the Mets, and obviously it would be a very popular decision with Met fans if Beltran was hired as the manager. Carlos probably figured, you know, I'm going to be one of the front runners anyway come October. Because no matter who they were hiring, in all likelihood, unless the team just went nuts, or maybe they even said, hey, okay, fine, we're going to go with Andy Green, and by the way, we're not hiring him. Like, I'm sure they're, who knows? Who knows the depth of those conversations? Like, obviously now, the next time David Stearns meets the media, which he meets it often, you know, every couple weeks, I'm sure he will be asked about this, to which he will probably not fully divulge any type of conversation or the depths of those conversations or what took place during those conversations. But according to Beltran, those conversations took place. And I'm not surprised. I'm not shocked at all by it. I think the Mets want Carlos Beltran to have a bigger role with this franchise. You know, he's obviously one of the best players to ever play for the franchise. He's one of the best center fielders ever. Certainly one of the best Mets of my lifetime. But I see Beltran taking on more of the general manager role and less of a managerial role. And I think that's the right course of action for both parties. I think Alex Cora, to me, is the way to go. Like, he's numero uno. He's number one on my list. And I think he should be number one on the Mets list because of the track record, because of the market that he managed in, because of the fact that he's dealt with superstar players. To me, Alex Cora is the right guy for this job. And that's the direction I would go if I was the Mets. And Beltran, by the way, further comments, quote, I had conversations with a few people in the organization, quote, and I don't know, I just didn't feel it was the right thing for me to do. And I think it has to do with, like, everything I just laid out. Hall of Fame, number being retired, interim tag, sort of auditioning for your job when you were already hired for the job a couple years ago, and Beltran's going to be heavily considered for this job in the offseason. You already got enough on your plate, enough things on your mind. Why bring in the managerial slash audition slash interim tag here for the final couple of months of the season when you could just sit back, relax, enjoy the celebration of your career, both nationally in the Hall of Fame and locally with your number being retired. And then in the offseason, you will be very much high on the list of the Mets, Steve Cohen, David Stearns, as far as being hired for this job. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. It is a Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. We'll continue to take your calls for the final half hour of the show. We'll also get into Cam Scataboo and his backflip that didn't get the landing stuck at Fanatics Fest. We'll do a little Knicks talk as well. So a lot to do here in the final segment or so here on After Hours. The phone number to join the conversation, 888-808-1019. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. It is After Hours, 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. This past weekend, it was Fanatics Fest, and there was a lot of news that came out of Fanatics Fest, including this ongoing feud with Tom Brady and Logan Paul, to the point where TMZ reported today that I think Tom Brady is reportedly in talks with WWE. I don't see Tom Brady stepping in a wrestling ring and actually wrestling. Perhaps he would manage somebody that would go up against Logan Paul, but I don't see Tom Brady taking bumps or getting in a wrestling ring and doing anything necessarily physical as far as a lengthy match or a match of any type with Logan Paul. But obviously these two have been going back and forth for quite some time. And then you had LeBron James, as we're all waiting on bated breath to see which team LeBron James picks and which team LeBron James ends up with next year. I'm just hoping it's one of these Eastern Conference teams so the Knicks could sort of send him packing on an early retirement present there, as whether it's Philly, who everybody wants to crown, even though they have zero depth. I mean, I can't tell you how many texts and messages I got about the Jaylen Brown trade was, oh man, how does Philly not win the championship? I'll tell you how. They have zero depth, and Embiid basically walks around like a mummy half the time on the court. He can't move it up and down the floor because he's so hobbled by a million injuries. That's how. So I still, after all this time here, a month since the championship and the free agencies and the trade or anything that's gone down, I still think the Knicks are the best team in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, everybody wanted to crown the Celtics because they figured Giannis would go there, and Giannis told, or the Bucks basically told Boston, no thank you, we're going to trade him to Miami, and Miami gave up a lot of depth, a lot of three-point shooters, so I don't see how they are going to, and it's tough to bring in a star player like that, and in 1 year you win a championship, especially when you gave up your depth. That's a big part of winning. It's not just the stars, it's not just the starting five, it's the guys that come off the bench. We saw that with the Knicks, whether it was Clarkson, whether it was GTA, whether, you know, they just had so many contributions really top to bottom that helped them win a championship. Landry Shamet, how can we not forget? I mean, he had just as much a role in that comeback in game one against the Cavs than anybody did. Same thing with Alvarado against the Spurs in that epic comeback at Madison Square Garden. So you need depth. And when I look at depth, when I look at star power, when I look at continuity, when I look at chemistry, I think the Knicks still have all of that, and they have that better than anybody else does in the East. So no matter where LeBron goes, and I don't know exactly what we're waiting for at this point. I thought maybe because it was Fanatics Fest, it's a big event. Much like last year when we found out at Fanatics Fest that Kevin Durant was getting traded to the Rockets, I thought he would unveil the team that he's going to, which leads me to two things. A, he doesn't know, or B, he's just being, well, quite frankly, a pig, and he's just letting this drag out for a long period of time so that we have to mention his name every day. And I'm interested only because, well, my team, I want them to defend their crown. And I'm kind of rooting for LeBron going to either the Sixers. The Cavs would just, I mean, please. I mean, the Cavs are, it's just, don't go to Cleveland. Not because he's going to put them over the top, but go to a team that actually isn't gutless, a team like Philly, who they might actually put up a little bit of a fight. I don't want a team to just sort of lay down their sword like Cleveland does every year. But a team like the Heat or Philly, I think, would be a really interesting landing spot for him. And I'm all for that playoff series between the Knicks and Philly if LeBron is on the team, or the Heat for that matter. Obviously, there's a longstanding rivalry with Miami and more of a short-standing rivalry with Philly, as the Knicks have knocked them out of the playoffs a couple times over the last few years. Now, speaking of Brunson and Kat, they were at Saturday night's main event, which, if you're not a wrestling fan, it's a wrestling event that WWE does, you know, every couple of months or so. This was at Madison Square Garden. Jalen Brunson got in the ring. Don't worry, he did not get physical at all, as he just basically stood to the side and Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins shot their angle for SummerSlam. And Kat, he got physical, but he could get physical. I mean, he basically picked somebody, Dominic Mysterio. He picked him up and chokeslammed him through a table because he was helping out Danhausen, which I know a lot of you are familiar with. Danhausen obviously uncursing the Knicks, and along with Positive Tommy, led the Knicks to a championship as far as the off-the-court extracurricular stuff. I was hoping to meet Danhausen out at Fanatics Fest. We were trying to set that up when I was out there, but he's a very busy man. Very nice, very evil. And he was doing some type of parade, I think, with Ron Killings. I always call him Ron Killings. I know he's R-Truth for the last million years. To me, he'll always be Ron Killings. But yeah, he was doing a parade with R-Truth outside. And credit to them, because it was literally pouring the entire time. It felt like it was, at least. When I came out of Penn Station, going to Fanatics Fest to walk over there, which was right around, whatever, 11:30 on Saturday. And I think, by the way, the weather we got on Saturday is the weather we're expecting later today. So that puts, I think, the Yankee game very much in doubt. Like, it's supposed to start, let me double check here. I think 11 a.m., but let's say 11 noon, give or take. The flash flood warnings, the rain, the heavy rain. Yeah, noon. At least it says in my location, which, how does the phone know exactly what my location is? It just, because when you look up New York weather, it's like, that's very vague. But according to my location, which I assume is Lower Manhattan, which is pretty much the Bronx. I mean, it's not literally, but whatever weather we get here, the Bronx would in all likelihood get that weather, even if it's just an hour later. But that weather lasts till right around 1 a.m. So it really covers the entirety of tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening. So I would say the Yankee game is very much in doubt, according to our weather people here, according to our rain people here, according to our flood people here. They said the game will get canned. They, being Paul Rosenberg, said the game will be rained out early in the afternoon, right around 2, 3 o'clock. But keep it posted here. Obviously, we will update. Not I will not be here during the afternoon. But whoever, Craig, obviously, will update you on what is going on, or if it happens during Evan and Tiki's show. And if that's the case, by the way, if the game gets rained out, you will get me for a Big Lugowski from 7 o'clock till midnight later on today, instead of the coming on after the game like I did tonight. Now, as far as Camp Scatterboo, speaking of Fanatics and all the things that went down at Fanatics, I very much was in defense of Camp Scatterboo going to Monday Night Raw and partaking in an angle or a segment on Raw. I had no issue with that. I thought it was a controlled environment with professionals. And I said it at the time, and I think it's true, in a situation where wrestlers, trained professionals, are getting into a physical, obviously part of the show, altercation with non-wrestlers, I worry more about the safety of the wrestlers than I do the athletes, because there could be some live rounds being thrown. They don't know how to necessarily work a punch to where it looks real, but it doesn't. It doesn't actually hurt you. Where I think a football player or a non-trained person might just throw a right hand, and if it connects, it connects. Sorry. My bad. So I was worried more about the Judgment Day, which is a group in wrestling that Cam had the angle with. And in this case, well, Dominic Mysterio, he seems to be the guy that hangs out with all, does all these things with the athletes, because he did it with Kat and then he did it with Scott. But I didn't have a problem with that. I know a lot of people did. I think the Giants were aware of it. They probably approved it. So all good. And obviously, Scatterboo's appearance here, the Giants are aware of it. I don't know if they were aware he was going to do a backflip. I'm sure Cam Scatterboo does a lot of backflips. We've seen that backflip a million times on the field. That's probably hyperbolic, but you know what I mean. This past year, he did it a bunch before he got hurt. And he usually sticks to landing. This time, he didn't. He didn't get hurt. I'm not super worried about it. I mean, to me, it's Cam Scatterboo being Cam Scatterboo. You're not going to stop Cam Scatterboo from being this guy. It's just the way he's wired. And Cam Scatterboo is wired the way he's wired. It's Cam being Cam. He's going to do his backflips. Sometimes he sticks to landing. Other times, he doesn't. But I don't think Cam Scatterboo has any type of intention of getting hurt. Like, everybody got all nuts when he did the angle on Monday Night Raw. He was obviously totally fine with that. He did the backflip here. Didn't stick the landing. People were all upset about that. Cam Scatterboo clearly fine. I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's Cam being Cam. And I don't think you could take that sort of mentality away from him. I'm sure the Giants and John Harbaugh aren't thrilled that he's up on stage doing backflips. But this idea that you're going to sit Cam Scatterboo down and say, hey, can you stop being Cam Scatterboo? It's like, well, this is why I'm Cam Scatterboo. This is why I'm in the NFL. That's just the mentality he has. It's the way he's wired. Some people just sort of march to the beat of their own drum. And I think Cam Scatterboo is definitely in that category. And I don't think you're going to change the makeup, the DNA, or the person that Cam Scatterboo is. He's an entertainer. He's a performer. If he's going to want to do a backflip, he's going to do a backflip. If he wants to go to Monday Night Raw, he's going to go to Monday Night Raw. If he's going to want to run until the wheels fall off and sort of have that reckless smash mouth abandon, then I think Cam Scatterboo is going to do that. And there's nothing that a Harbaugh or anybody in the Giants organization can say to him to make him stop doing that. He's not breaking any law. He's not doing anything wrong. So I don't think that a sit down or a talking to is going to change the mentality of Cam Scatterboo. He's going to do his backflips. He's going to have his fun. And he's going to play his career until he no longer physically can hold up anymore. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. These next 2 weeks are going to be very interesting. It's obviously going to be a lot of trade deadline talk around here, which in many ways, even with the Yankees, I think is going to sort of overshadow the games themselves. Because the Yankees are in a position they're in, you know, barring just a major meltdown here. They are going to, the Yankees, the postseason. I expect them to get to the World Series. So what they do over the next week or two, although the way the Red Sox are playing, they haven't lost a game. I mean, they have won 14 in a row. And the amazing part about the Red Sox run here is that they didn't cool off during the All-Star break. Like, if you're on a heater, if you're on a hot streak, if you're on a winning streak like the Red Sox were, the last thing you would want is the All-Star break. Because it can slow you down. It could stop momentum. But that didn't happen. The Red Sox swept the doubleheader right out of the gate against Tampa. They ended up sweeping that series. And they've continued this winning streak to now to the tune of 14 in a row. Where Boston went from sellers to buyers. And this is why I always put that positive hat on and say, all it takes is a winning. Now, it's hard to get a 14-game winning streak. But if you can get this type of winning streak, you can get yourself right back into the race, right back into the postseason conversation. And that's exactly what Boston has done. They went from sellers to buyers. They went from pretenders to contenders. And they are right there now with the Yankees, with the Rays. To me, it's a three-team race to win the division. I wouldn't be surprised at all if all three teams get to October. I mean, the American League West is only going to get one team. The Central might only get one team. So that would open up a couple opportunities for the AL East. I don't see Tampa falling off in the second half. Like, I don't think they're a great team, but I think they're good. I think they're good. The Yankees, despite all their injuries, will get there. But Boston has become a major wild card now. Like, when you get this hot and you start to believe and you have the pitching they have and you start to get that mojo and that magic, and it's kind of like the Mets in 24. You know, people wrote you off. People left you for dead. People said your season's over. You fire the manager. And then all of a sudden, you have this type of winning streak and you are now the hottest team in baseball. You're a dangerous team. And people look at you very differently. And I'm sure, look, they're not going to say it outwardly, but the last thing the Yankees want is more teams from the AL East, especially the Red Sox. I know they beat them last year, but that was last year. The last thing you want is a team that is red hot, because this is almost like the... Now, the Jays weren't this bad, but the Jays got red hot last year, and they rode that all the way through the regular season to the World Series, where they had the Dodgers on the ropes, not just once, but twice. And if not for the Dodgers being, well, as great as they are, the Blue Jays would be the reigning defending champions. And Boston's been kind of on that run. You just don't see an end in sight for them. And the reason you're optimistic is because, or you're optimistic that they're going to continue to play this well, is because they have good pitching. And the bats that were either quiet or injuries or whatever kind of held them down over the first couple months, they have now woken up. They have now gotten to where they needed to be. And I don't even think it's necessarily a managerial change. And I don't think it's much of a, and this is not to take anything away from Don Mattingly. The Phillies are a veteran team that underperformed early on. I think the Phillies would be in the position they're in regardless of the managerial change. But if you want to credit that because it has sparked teams in the past and you want to give Don Mattingly all the credit, fine. Have at it. Boston, I just think, is they've gotten hot here. They've gotten, and they were underachievers too. But Boston has put themselves into the category where they are a very dangerous team down the stretch. And this is why the Yankees, not only do they have to focus on the next couple of weeks to try to close that gap between themselves and the Dodgers, which was apparent over the weekend that the Dodgers are way better. But, you know, the Dodgers are also back-to-back champs. And the Yankees are missing some players. And that's probably underselling it. They're missing superstar players, or at least a superstar player in Aaron Judge. Stanton can be that superstar level on any given weekend, and Max Fried is one of the best pitchers in baseball. But that's why this trade deadline is so important. You not only want to close the gap between yourself and LA, but you also want to keep pace with the teams in your division and the teams that are in the race, Boston, Tampa, etc. Sean is in Westchester. What's up, Sean?
Trading deadline's coming around, so Brian Cashman's going to be coming out of hibernation. Listen, the Yankees want to win.
Would you consider yourself a baseball historian?
A former baseball historian.
That's what it is. Yes. Got it. Yeah, yeah. So you better than anybody could talk about not only just baseball, but just this trade deadline. Like, you come with big-time credentials.
Definitely. Basically, I have few peers when it comes to that.
I'm not sure if you have any, Sean. I mean, we've talked a bunch of times before. I don't know if anybody really is on your level besides me. But, I mean, outside of that, you just sort of are your own entity when it comes to not only the history of baseball, but the history of just life in general, this radio station and the world we live in.
Well, I could tell you right now, if I was the Yankee manager in 2004, the Yankees would have won. I would have let off Judge. And I would have batted Soto second. Mm-hmm. Three times, if I managed the Yankees would have won. The Yankees would have 30 championships.
I tend to agree with that. Now, I don't know why. Oh, well, probably because they don't know who you are and you have zero credentials as far as managerial or history or sort of experience. But outside of that, those little couple of pieces of red tape, you know, Sean, I don't know why they don't consider you.
Well, the thing is, like, let's put a period on it and an escalation point.
Yes.
It's a closed club, okay?
Yeah.
If I manage the Yankees, listen, I'm a former historian. I think the audience knows that.
They do, though.
If I manage the Yankees in 26, 60, and 2024, now 2024, I could have, the other 2 years it would have been difficult for me to manage them. But if
I did, 24, they're sweeping the Dodgers if you're the manager. I think you've made that abundantly clear. You would lead off Aaron Judge, you would bat Juan Soto second, and that's really your plan. And just have those two guys bat five times a game, and they would have swept the Dodgers.
Definitely. Yeah. And listen, that's the way I look at it. Then I had to watch the Dodgers do exactly what I wanted to do. When they let off the guy who hit, what did he hit, 100 home runs that year, Ohtani, they had him leading off. It's as if they were listening to the fan, their front office.
Clearly they're listening.
Wait, that's a good idea.
They're listening on the Odyssey app. That's what they're listening
Definitely.
To. Definitely.
Now, in the 60 World Series.
Well, I mean, the 60 World Series. Yeah, but 60
wait.
World. I know, but you said you're a former baseball historian. Now you're going down the Richard and Manhattan rabbit hole. You got to get, there's no reference a little bit more modern. You had to go all the way to 1960. I'm going to listen to it, but I feel like you're going, this is a deep cut.
All right. No, you got that. Well, first of all, Richard from Manhattan is a national treasure.
I would say so. You know what? When it comes to, we'll go by, you're going by Sean tonight. I would say this, Sean. You are not the historian, as great as you are, as Richard Manhattan is. You're just not. But I don't think that's necessarily a diss. I mean, who is, you know? I forgot about Richard. You're right to say that. Yes, he is the historian of historians.
The thing is, I've already said that. There's two guys who are better than me historically. Richard from Manhattan. And Joey Baby Beningo. Joey Baby can tell you at the game. He can tell you when he was at the hot dog stand and what happened when he was at some book. To
he's
me,
got a great long-term memory. Both of them do. They could just recite things from sports from 40, 50 years ago. But now you got to show me your chops here. Now, what happened? Well, I don't know. Do we really want to go down memory lane here, Sean? They don't need the memory lane, though, stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's more about the here and now, even as a former historian, Sean. In fact, you know what? I got to make you history, too. Sean, if that is your real name. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. This is a fellow that I haven't heard from in years. Years. I see what he says about me on social media, and it's never kind. But, because he's Team Fatso. He's Team Marash. Which, for some people, for some reason, they feel like they have to be either Team Marash or they have to be Team Tommy. I don't understand that. Why can't you be both? But this gentleman, if it's who I think he is, maybe it's not. Maybe I did this whole build-up here, and it's not who I'm thinking it is. But if this is the former Woody in Plattsburgh who moved to, I don't know where the heck, did he move to Mexico? He moved out of the country and he listened on the app, but he rarely, if ever, called. I have not spoken to him, I don't think, since I've taken over here in the nights and overnights. But if this is who he is and he just hung up, maybe it wasn't Woody. I did that long build up there and then he hung up. All right, whatever. But I think that was Woody in Plattsburgh who was about to call me. Not that you're, I gave him the whole big long setup there, and then he hung up. Perhaps it wasn't him. But if it actually is the former Woody in Plattsburgh, I do see his tweets sometimes, and he always takes Sean's side in this. I've noticed that. Like, some people take Sean's side over me, which, I mean, listen, you're on the wrong side of history there if you're taking Sean's side. But why do there need to be sides? Why does there have to be a line drawn in the sand? 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Let's head out to Casey. He's calling us from Garfield. He's on After Hours. What's up, Casey?
How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Hey. Hey. Thank you for answering my phone call.
Well, that's great. Listen, I really couldn't. I have to thank you because I can't take it unless you make it. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like I called you. So if I called you, then you'd say, thanks for calling. I appreciate you checking in. But the fact that you called me, I really should be thanking you because you called me. Now I take your call.
You know why? I've been a fan for 57 years.
You've been a fan? You're saying you've been a fan of mine for 57 years?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mike Francesa.
Oh, Mike and Dog. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know what, though, Casey? And a lot of people don't know this about me. They think I'm just a Johnny-come-lately. You know, I'm as much of a fan as this radio station as anybody. You know, I grew up listening to it, which we all did. But I just want to make that clear to the public.
Casey,
your line is breaking up a little bit, handsome. We're going to put you on hold. We're going to make sure we get that right. Because you're breaking up a couple of times there, and I don't want the audience. You know, we have an audience to think about. If we were just talking in our personal life, I wouldn't care. I'd let it go. But when we have an audience, I don't want them to have to just sit there and not be able to make out what you're saying. So we'll see if we can get you back up. But Phil in Massapequa joins us. What's up, Phil?
Hey, Louie. You do a great job. Love listening to you. You're exciting. You're fun. I love the idea of bringing Scoobal in. I love the idea of having Cora coach. I just don't know whether that infield of theirs is, you could put it back together. It's like Humpty Dumpty. Is Lindor play himself into a question mark? Is are going to bring Bichette back?
Well, it's up to Bichette. It's up to Bichette. I mean, Lindor, I would keep. I do think the Mets are going to keep him. I think he's just having one of those years that are unexplainable. I'm of the hope that Bo Bichette opts back in. And then as far as the rest of the infield, I mean, you still have, I mean, Simeon and Polanco are under contract. So whether Bo Bichette stays or not, if let's say he's gone, then you're really only filling one position. And I don't think they're getting rid of Alvarez or Turenne. So you're looking at third base as the position you're filling in the offseason.
Well, a subpar player at second base, unless Bichette moves to second base. I mean, if that's the case, then maybe there's a play there and leave Beatty at third. But
I have a feeling Brett Beatty is probably playing his last couple games as a Met. That's just my gut feeling.
Well, look, I'd love to see him bring somebody in a little bit more firm at third base and maybe have re-signed Bichette for second, and maybe there's a chance.
Yeah, I mean, Bichette, as far as re-signing, I mean, it's up to Bo if he's going to opt in. Now, I am optimistic that he will because of the money that he's making. Where else is he going to get this type of money? I know it's an opt-in for 1 year, but I think it's for like $42 million. I just don't see where that's coming to him in the free agent market. So my hope and my kind of feel right now is that Bo Bichette will opt in, which I think is a good thing because, look, he kind of has fallen into the category that a lot of people fell into, whether it's Piazza, whether it's Lindor, whether it's Soto, that, hey, he came with a track record. He didn't have the start that everybody was looking forward to him having, but then ultimately he got out of it and ended up having a really nice career with the Mets. And we'll see if Bo Bichette is a long-term Met, but as far as short-term, second half and next year if he decides to opt in, I do think he will be more in that category and not in the categories of the Jason Bays and the Robbie Alomars and the Mo Vaughns that came here, stunk, and never were good.
Well, I hope Cora is on Soto's Christmas card list.
I think that, well, I think that Cora, when it comes to hiring Cora, you're right, star players have a say. Stearns will obviously have a say. I think Steve Cohen will have a big say. I just would be stunned if anybody would have an objection to hiring Alex Cora. We're going to talk about one of the best managerial candidates that you could have, and he is somehow available here. You know, he shouldn't have. I know Boston's gone on this run, but Alex Cora is a great manager. I was stunned that the Red Sox got rid of him. And the fact that he is sitting there available, waiting for you in the offseason, or I should say at least available. I mean, look, he has a history with the Mets, so I think he'd be open to managing them. I think you go all in, much like the Giants did with Harbaugh.
Great. Well, look, if not him, then Pujols. That's the way I'd probably see it.
Pujols is interesting. The reason that I have some intrigue with Pujols is because it's such an unknown. Like, I can't sit here and say he's going to be great, but I also can't sit here and say he's going to be bad. There's no track record to go off of. Albert Pujols could be the next great manager in baseball. I have no idea. You have no idea. None of us have any idea. He obviously has a great relationship with the star player, with Juan Soto. But as far as whether he's going to be good or not, I have no idea. What I do know, Phil, and I appreciate the call, is that Albert Pujols is one of the greatest baseball players ever. Now, that doesn't always translate to be a great manager. But I kind of like the idea of the unknown. But I still have Alex Cora as the number one guy on my list by a wide margin. To me, it's Cora and then it's a huge drop down to the next managerial candidate on my list. It's basically right now Alex Cora or bust. That'll do it for me. My thanks to Rosenberg. My thanks to Ray Jarvis. Appreciate all the callers. Appreciate all the listeners. Zach Gelb comes your way next. And then I will have you with After Hours later today. We'll see if there's a Yankee game. If there's not, I'll be on at 7. If there is one, I'll be on after the game. But either way, we'll talk to you then right here on After Hours.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Man. W.